Chapter 21. Early morning was enveloped in white mist. It clung to tree and bush like a gossamer shawl, sparkling with dewdrops and the promise of a hot sunny day ahead. Eager to be on their way, the three friends broke fast as they travelled. Martin unpacked scones for them. Gonf doled out a russet apple apiece, and Dinny vanished into the mist, reappearing with a canteen of fresh spring water. Limbs loosened as the night stiffness receded. They stepped out at a brisk pace to Gonf's latest marching chant.
Salamandastron, look out, here we come. A thief, a warrior and a mole. Though the quest may take its toll, we'll march until we reach our goal. Salamandastron.
The flood of morning sun penetrated the mists, melting them into a yellowy haze. Martin and Gonf struggled to keep straight faces, listening to Dinny chanting the marching verse in mole tongue.
Saladana scorn, look at Yuri come.
Still in fine fettle, they reached the outskirts of Mossflower Woods. Pushing on through the fringes, they found themselves facing a brown earth road, which curved and bent like a snake. Beyond it lay the far dim expanses of the flatlands, shimmering in the heat. Between the path and the flatlands was a deep ditch, though because of the dry weather, it contained only the merest trickle of water. The companions kept silent, remembering that Scratch and his aides might well be somewhere nearby. Gonf went back to the woods and returned with a long stout branch. Taking his knife, the mouse thief trimmed off the twigs. Martin watched with interest.
"What are you up to, matey?"
he asked, keeping his voice low. Young Dinny knew.
"He making a pole to jump ditcher. Squirrel beast do it, effin they bain't no tree to swing offen."
Martin took the pole and felt its balance.
"Oh, I see. A vaulting pole. Good idea, Gonf."
Making sure his grip was firm on the pole near its top, Gonf levelled it in front of him.
"Me first, Dinny next, then you, matey. Watch me and see how it's done. I'm a prince of vaulters, you know."
Gonf broke into a fast trot, with the pole held straight out. He sped across the road, then dipping the pole into the ditch, he levered upwards and out. Martin saw the pole bend, carrying Gonf high into the air. The momentum swung him easily across the ditch. He landed lightly on his paws and pushed the pole back to the mole. Dinny held it gingerly, whispering to Martin,
"Mercy, O Yates, a leaving old earth. 'Tis only birds be so foolhardy. Ar well, here I go!"
Dinny performed a waddling little shuffle, jabbed the pole into the ditch and rose slowly into the air. The impetus was not sufficient to carry him across. He wavered in the air and began dropping back. Martin made a mad dash, catching the pole low down. He thrust against it and whipped back with all his force. Dinny was catapulted away from the pole across the ditch. He hit the far bank near the top and was grabbed by Gonf, who helped him to scrabble out. Dinny lay kissing the grass, thankful to be back on firm ground. Martin's strength and fearlessness helped him to make the crossing with ease. He quite enjoyed the sensation of flying through the air. When Dinny was fully recovered, they commenced their journey into the flatlands. They were not long gone when Blacktooth yawned and stretched himself in the ditch. The trackers had camped a short distance south of the vaulting area. Splitnose rolled over in his sleep and slid from the narrow strip of dry bottom into the slimy, shallow water.
You lousy vermin, who did that? Come on, own up.
You did it yourself, Puddin'head. It's a wonder you never carried on snoring.
What, me snoring? Have you ever heard yourself? Sounds like a goose gargling.
Rubbish! I never slept a wink. Oh, I dropped off for a moment or two a while back. Funny, though. I dreamed I saw a mouse just up that way a piece. Guess what? He flew across the ditch.
He wasn't followed by Clad pretending to be a swallow, was he?
Ha! You can laugh, Fatty, but it was almost as if I was awake. The mouse flew, I tell you.
Fatty yourself. That's what you get for hogging all those rations last night. It was a nightmare brought on by pure greed.
It was not. It was more like a daymare brought on by the hunger. I'm starving.
Scratch ignored their arguing. Pulling himself from the ditch, he took a chunk of bread from his pack and began munching it. Splitnose and Blacktooth stopped fighting to complain.
Oi! That's not fair! You're supposed to be the leader! It's up to you to see we're properly fed!
That's right! I've only got a stingy little bit of crust and it's sopping wet from that stinking ditch water.
Contemptuously scratched through a crust on the bank edge.
There you are. First out gets it.
The ferret and the stoat fought tooth and claw. They kicked each other down in an effort to be first out of the ditch. Blacktooth won. He grabbed the crust as Splitnose wailed piteously.
Give me some, Blackie. Go on. I'd give you half if I had bread.
No, you wouldn't, stoat face.
Yes, I would.
Wouldn't.
Would.
Blacktooth relented with bad grace.
Oh, here, scringe tail. Don't pick it all down in one gobful.
Oh, that's not fair. You've got the biggest half.
Scratch had wandered further up the bank. He chewed on a young dandelion, pulled a face, spat it out and shouted,
Oi, you two, stop bellyaching and look at this.
They ambled up, chewing the last of the crust.
What is it?
Scratch shook his head in despair.
What you think it is, loafbrains? Look, it's the track of those two mice and the mole. See here and here. The paw prints are as clear as day. They're travelling west.
Splitnose found the pole and held it up triumphantly.
Aha! Another clue! They must have used this to climb out of the ditch on.
Oh, chuck it away, Boldernose.
Scratch sneered.
You'll be telling me next that they used it to fly through the air on. Come on, you two. At least we're on their trail.
From the topmost branches of a beech on the south side of Katia, Chib checked the straps on his pack before flying off to the cells. Brush and Birch watched him, flying into the thin dawn light. Then Brush readied the next pack.
Shouldn't take too long, and we can nip back and see how the battle's going.
Birch looked to his quiver.
Well, I'm nearly out of arrows. Bet the others are too. Tell you what, you stay here and see to the robin while I swing back to base. I'll gather all the arrows I can lay my paws on from the stores and take them to our archers.
Good idea. See you later, mate.
Around the back of the elm, it was only a short distance from the heavy loam of the woodlands. Formal led the little party, Columbine and Ben bringing up the rear with Soil Flyer, a champion young digging mole.
Only a little ways now, gaffers.
He chuckled secretively.
As diggers do have a fine tunnel awaiting for you to escape through.
Gratefully, they were helped into the broad tunnel dug by the moles. As they progressed along it, Columbine could hear Soil Flyer filling in behind them. Up ahead, Formal said comfortingly to some mice,
Never ye fear, little good beasts. We may go into mole deep. None may find either.
Samina's determination was unabated. She pushed her forces ruthlessly forward.
Come on! Can't you see they aren't sending over as many arrows or stones? Keep going! We've got them!
Fortunata's ear throbbed unmercifully. The vixen was lucky that the arrow had not struck a bit lower, or it would have been her skull. Clamping a pawful of her own herbs to the wound, she looked up dismally as a large squirrel swung in, laden with quivers of arrows. The fox dropped back a few paces, muttering beneath her breath.
If you think you've got them, milady, then go and get them yourself.
Two of Skipper's crew were driving long, sharp stakes into the ground at the base of the elm trunk. Earth had been piled around the stakes, and leafy branches scattered on top. From a distance, it looked for all the world like a crew of otters lying in wait, armed with spears. The newly arrived arrows drove the Katir soldiers back a short distance, despite Sarmina's threats and blandishments. Lady Amber checked to see that the moles had got away with their charges.
Is it ready, Skip?
Skipper held up a paw.
As ready as it'll ever be, ma'am.
Good. We'll fire a last couple of heavy salvos while you slip off with the crew. See you back at Brockhall.
Aye. Good hunting, ma'am. Come on, crew!
Once again, Amber's tail stood up straight.
Archers! Fire!
Sarmina and Clud heard the command.
Down flat! Keep your heads down! Shields up!
Clud bellowed to the soldiers. When the invaders lifted their heads, the otters were gone. There followed an eerie silence, broken only by the rustle of the treetops. Sarmina knew this was the squirrels retreating. She straightened up and ventured a pace forward. Clud joined her.
Bunch of cowards, eh, milady? Looks like they've run away.
Sarmina peered toward the mound at the base of the elm.
Maybe, maybe not. I think they might have set up some sort of trap. Or is that a crew of otters armed with spears? Take 10 soldiers and investigate it, Clud. Go on. We're here to back you up.
Reluctantly, Clud selected 10 creatures and set off gingerly for the enemy lines. He ducked once or twice when someone stepped on a twig. Finally, he arrived at the mound. Knowing the danger had passed, Clud kicked at a leafy bough and prodded the mound with his spear.
All clear, my lady. It was only a stupid trick to make us think they were still here.
What about the squirrels, Clud?
Fortunata sounded cautious. The weasel captain peered upward into the elm branches, then hailed his spear straight up. Several soldiers dodged out of the way as it landed back, point up in the mound. A small amount of twigs and leaves fell with it.
Not a hide nor hair of the lily-livered bunch.
Clud puffed his chest out as he retrieved his spear. Relieved and exultant, the soldiers of Katir rose up, cheering and stamping about in a victory dance.
We won! We won!
Won what?
Sarmina's voice rose angrily above the celebration.
Fools! Can't you see it's an empty triumph? No plunder, no slaves, no submission. They vanished completely, and what have we gained? A few yards of woodland that belongs to me anyway.
The sudden volley of arrows slashed down, taking them unawares. Soldiers threw up shields, diving headlong for the undergrowth. Even the wildcat queen had to beat an undignified retreat behind the elm tree she had conquered. Once again, the chattering, derisory laughter of squirrels as they swung off into the fastnesses of Mossflower was all that remained of the woodlanders. Gingivere had enlarged the two holes so that Ferdy and Cogs were able to squeeze through into his cell. Gleefully, they obtained the contents of the first pack.
Good old Mum's apple pie.
Ooh, elderberry cordial.
Look, cheese and hazelnuts.
Candied chestnuts too. I bet old Chief didn't know about them.
Come on, Mr. Gingivere. Here's some seed cake and milk. Let's have a secret supper together. Then you can tell us the news from Chib.
Amidst the laughter, Gingivere brushed away a tear from his eye. He was delighted with the company of his two little hedgehog friends after the long, lonely confinement following his father's death. It was noontide when Martin and Dinny sat down to rest. Gonf stood surveying the vastness that surrounded them. Undulating plain, flatland and moorland stretched away into the distance. The far horizon danced and shimmered in the unseasonal heat. Gonf thought he could detect a smudge on the horizon, but he could not be sure until they had travelled further. The mouse thief turned, looking back to where they had come from.
Well, mateys, it's certainly a big wide world outside the woodlands and good old Mossflower. I can still glimpse it back there.
Dinny lay back, chewing a blade of grass.
And can he still see yon little mouse maid a-waving to he?
Gonk shielded his eyes with his paw and played along.
Why, yes, and there's someone else too. It looks like your grandad waving his stick. He wants that deeper than ever pie you stole from him.
That wasn't Dinny,
Martin yawned.
You probably stole it. See anything else?
Gonf's whiskers twitched.
Ah, those three vermin that are tracking us. Looks like they've picked up our trail, matey.
Martin and Dinny leapt up, staring in the direction Gonf was pointing.
There, see? A weasel, a ferret, and a stoat. Now they've started to run. Why are they in a hurry all of a sudden?
Probably because they've sighted us and now we stood up,
Dinny suggested.
Aye, matey, you're right. Well, what do we do now, warrior? Stand and fight. You just say the word.
Martin gnawed his lip, stopping his paw from straying to the otter sling bound about his middle.
No, that's not what we're questing for. We'd be losing valuable time. It's our duty to find Salomon Dastron and Boar the Fighter, so that he can return with us to save Mossflower. The first thing a warrior must learn is orders and duty.
Gonf strapped his pack back on. Dinny had not removed his. He was away and running, small velvety paws pounding the grassland.
Come on, ye two,
he called.
Uzzins can lose thy vermin afore eventide.
The three friends ran in silence, measuring their stride and conserving energy. All that could be heard above the drumming of the paws was a descending lark and the chirrup of grasshoppers in the dry grassland warmth. The high sun above watched the scene like a great golden eye. The hunter jogged steadily on, with the hunters rushing behind to close the gap. There was no infirmary for the wounded at Katir. Soldiers lay about in the barracks, licking their hurts and tending to themselves as best as they could. Clud was quite pleased with himself. They had driven off the woodlanders, and the army had not retreated, so what was all the fuss about? He put the question to Ashleg.
Try telling her that, weasel. Here she comes.
The Pine Marten's cloak swirled about as he pointed to the stairs. Samina bounded into the barracks, crooking a claw at them.
You two, up to my room, right away.
There was little to be gained by arguing, so at sinking hearts, they trooped up the stairway. Fortunata was already there, her ear painfully swollen from the arrow wound. Ashleg could not resist a sly snigger.
Looks like you need a healer, Fox.
Samina swept in just in time to hear the jibe.
One more remark like that, wooden pin, and you'll need a new head. Now, what happened to my ambush in the woods?
They stood dumbly, waiting for the storm to break. It was not long in coming. The Wildcat Queen cleared the table in one reckless sweep. Bell, dishes, ornaments, linen and food crashed to the floor.
Nothing! That's what we gained from it all.
She raged around the chamber, kicking over furniture, tearing at wall hangings and bending fire irons out of shape as her voice rose to a maddened howl.
I saw them! Me! I set up the ambush, warned you, marshalled the army, led the charge, and thought that you buffoons had the brains and courage to assist me. What did I receive? Not one original idea or scrap of encouragement.
Her whole body quivered with dangerous temper. Then suddenly she slumped into a chair, as if temporarily exhausted by her outburst. The quaking trio stood staring at the floor for inspiration as she scowled at them.
Ah, what business is it of yours, anyway? You're not supposed to think, only to carry out orders. It's my job to do all the brain work around here. I suppose nothing will bother you three until the food supplies run out. Oh, they won't last forever, you know. I've seen for myself. The stores are getting lower since we were unable to levy tribute from the few that lived around our walls. That's the trouble with being a conqueror and having an army to feed. Soldiers are no good at providing anything unless they can snatch it away from the helpless.
She stretched and kicked moodily at a fallen goblet.
Well, any ideas?
There's always the two prisoners I caught, m'lady.
Clud sounded half apologetic. Samina sat bolt upright.
Of course! Well done, weasel. Maybe you aren't as stupid as I thought. Prisoners. Yes. What do you think the woodlanders would pay as ransom for those young hedgehogs?
Fortunata narrowed her eyes calculatingly.
Well, I've had more dealings with woodlanders than most. They're a soft, sentimental lot when it comes to young ones. I think that they'd give quite a bit to get them back safe.
Safe? That's the key.
Samina purred happily.
Imagine if the woodlanders saw their babies exposed to real suffering or danger. We could practically name our own terms.
The trio relaxed visibly, now that the queen was in a saner mood. There was one other listener to the conversation who had no cause to rejoice. Chib the Robin, perched on the outside window ledge. Splitnose was the first to slacken pace. He gradually slowed to an easy lope. Blacktooth joined him, leaving Scratch to make the running. The weasel stopped and turned. He curled his lip in disgust at the pair, who were now sitting on the grass panting. Scratch ran back, energetically, drawing his dagger.
Get up, you idle worms! Come up on your paws, both of you!
Splitnose teased a passing ant with his claws.
Oh, what's the point? They're well away. We'll never catch them now.
Scratch kicked out a Blacktooth.
I suppose you think the same, lazy bones.
Blacktooth kicked back insolently.
Oh, give it a rest. You can't make us run.
Right. So it's mutiny, eh?
Scratch looked from one to the other disdainfully.
Then, here's something for you two buckos to think about. One, if you don't get running, I'll stab the pair of you. Two, unless you decide to run, I won't share my rations with you. And three, think about when I make my report. The Queen will be pleased to hear how you two lay down on the job.
Wordlessly, they rose and started running again. Gonf trotted alongside his friends, his quick eye noting the landscape.
It gets a bit hilly further on, mateys.
We could drop down and hide in a dozen places. What do you say? Shall we give them the slip?
Martin glanced backwards.
I'd rather not risk it. They've got us in plain view. No, best keep on until evening. Then we can pick a good hiding place when it's dark and camp there the night. Are you all right, Dinny?
The mole wrinkled his snout.
Don't like a running. Lucky I'm stronger than most. You keep a going, Martin. Don't worry over I.
The noon sun gained intensity. Birds soaring on the upper thermals passed over the six tiny figures below, hunters and hunted. To spare themselves on, Splitnose and Blacktooth played the game, shouting out their favourite dishes to each other. Scratch ran a length behind them, keeping his dagger drawn as an insurance against further rebellion. Despite himself, the weasel had to keep licking his lips, not being able to shut his ears against the feathers and the stoat.
Some of those candy chestnuts and a flagon of cold cider. Could you manage that, Blackie?
How could I? How about a baby trout grilled in butter with some of that woodland October ale?
Very nice. But have you tried a blackberry muffin soaked in warm honey with a few beakers of iced strawberry cordial to wash them down?
Oh, stop it, Splitty! You're reminding me of that time when old Lord Green Eyes had a plunder feast at Katia. Those were the days. I had iced strawberry cordial in a big drinking bowl with mint leaves floating on it and crushed raspberries too. I remember I sucked it all through a corn straw. Oh, I must have supped enough of it to have a good bath in.
Ugh. Scratch called out in disgust.
I was enjoying that until I had a vision of you all covered in mud and muck, sitting in a bath of iced strawberry cordial with two mint leaves stuck up your snout and a pile of crushed raspberries shoved into your ears. Doesn't bear thinking about. Anyhow, why don't you two shut your traps and keep your eyes on those three ahead?
Dinny was first to gain the low hills. He ran up one side and rolled down the other. Martin and Gonf joined in until all three were dizzy. They ran onward as the shadows began to lengthen. Gonf gradually dropped back. He was breathing heavily. When they turned to look, he waved his paws.
Keep going, mateys. This is much harder work than thieving.
Without hurting Gonf's feelings, they slacked the pace to match his. Martin noticed that the blob on the horizon they had seen earlier that day was not merely a low cloud bank.
Look, Gonf, it's a range of mountains. Big ones, too. What do you think, Din?
The young mole squinted hard to bring the view into perspective.
Oh, boyer, that they be. I reckons that be where the teeth of land reaches up to eight woolen sheeps with they girt heads in clouds.
Clever, Dinny, mate.
Gonf nodded admiringly.
Exactly as the poem says, a farther teeth of land rise up to bite the wool of sheep. They look quite close, but don't let that fool you. We've got a fair bit of travelling to do before we reach them.
Dinny risked a backward glance through a fold in the hills.
They vermin bags be none closer either. Spectres uns be mightier runners.
Scratch had taken the lead again. He knew the others were hungry and sure to follow. Trying to keep their quarry in sight was difficult, as they were often hidden by the hills. Descending the first low hill, he stopped to extract a bear from his pad. The other two ran slap-bang into him from behind.
Clodhoppers!
He shouted.
How is it that you have all this open country to run in, yet you both manage to crash into me? What do you think this is? A game of leapfrog?
More bickering and backbiting ensued. Scratch ended the dispute by banging their heads together.
Look, it's nearly dark now and I've gone and lost them thanks to you two oafs.
He gritted his teeth in frustration. Martin and Gonf prepared the evening meal, while Dinny enlarged a small hole on the far side of the final hill. In a short while, they were happily installed in a superb little cave. Dinny had even dug a ledge halfway round for them to rest on. The three friends lay on the ledge, eating their supper and watching the crimson underbellies of purple cloud rolls as night took over from the long hot day. Scratch and his minions sat out in the open on top of the highest hill, hoping that they might catch sight of the others at next daybreak. Night on the open lands was both cold and windy. Chib paced the mantelpiece at Brockhall, relating all he had heard at Katir. The Corran were worried by this new threat to Ferdy and Cogs.
This is an unwelcome development.
Lady Amber waved her bushy tail anxiously. The robin ruffled his crimson breast feathers importantly.
On the surface, it would appear to be so. However, our wildcat ally in the prison said to tell you that he may be able to forestall Sarmina's plans a while.
Bella looked up to the mantelpiece.
How will he manage that, Chib?
The robin folded his wings behind as he explained.
Well, excuse me, Gingivir has taken a stone from the walls on each cell, as you know. He proposes to hide both Ferdy and Cogs in his own cell after sealing the wall holes up. That way, if the enemy do not think of searching his cell too closely, they will naturally suppose that the two prisoners have escaped.
There was wholesale approval for the clever plan. Skipper had an additional idea.
Hark now! What if we was to pretend that Ferdy and Cogs were safe with us? That'd take suspicion off Gingivir.
How will we manage that, Skip?
Bella was curious to know.
Easy, marm. We'll find two other little hedgehogs and disguise them, then let them be seen by someone from Katir.
Good thinking, Skipper,
Bella said with approval.
But now we'll really have to think of how we can rescue Ferdy and Cogs. Gingivir's plan is brave and daring. However, it puts all three at great risk.
Lady Amber shook her head.
Where do we get two little ones that look like Ferdy and Cox?
Well, you may lend my little Spike and Posy.
Goody said from the doorway.
Long as they don't come to no harm. Though I must say, they don't look a smidgen like my Ferdy and Cogs. I can tell my little ones apart like apples from nuts.
Abbess Germaine tapped her paw to her nose.
Two blanket cloaks, two saucepan helmets, a piece of stick each, like the swords of make-believe warriors. I think that would fool anyone from a distance, Goody. But what about a rescue attempt? Have we any kind of firm plan?
You leave that to old Skip, marm.
Skipper laughed dryly.
Boola, you take charge of the crew while I'm away. I think I'll pay the mask a visit.
What's the mask?
Several woodlanders voiced the question.
You'll soon see.
Boola winked.